Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Brew University Book Club Podcast. It is Season 1, Entree Leadership by Dave Ramsey. I'm your host, Jeff Weaver, Training Director for J.J. Taylor, and with me, my regular crowd of book club readers, a collection of roses if there ever was one, who will be breaking down Chapter 11 for us today, People Matter Most. So let's introduce them to you again, in case it's been a week and you have forgotten. But how could you forget this cast of characters? They're great. Here's Dustin Schatz from Tampa. Dustin, how's it going?
It's going good.
Good. Glad to have you with us. Dan Endres in Minnesota. Dan, how's it doing?
Going great. A little chilly, but good.
Oh, you are getting to the end of that glorious Minnesota summer where it starts to cool down now, isn't it? Chris Morgan's in Fort Myers, where it's probably hot and raining like it is here on the east coast of Florida. Chris, how are you doing?
Very good. Definitely not chilly.
No, we are enjoying our September Florida heat wave for sure. Same as they probably are in Tampa, where Suzanne Borgia is. Hi, Suzanne.
Good morning. About 100 degrees here. Yep.
Oh, fantastic. Nothing like triple digits. And Lisa Velez there as well. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing today?
We're great. We are ready to transition into Chapter 11, and it is going to be a good one because it is all about people in this chapter. Chapter 11 titled People Matter Most. And boy, if that doesn't sound like something we would say here at J.J. Taylor, I don't know what could. So let's talk a little bit about Chapter 11 and what you guys got out of it and how we can continue to make ourselves first choice for our most important assets, our people, by learning what Dave has to say on it as well. What do you guys think of Chapter 11?
I think you just nailed it, Jeff. Our people are our most important asset, so we need to spend the most time on our people and we will succeed.
All right. Well, that was a good one, guys. We got it done. There it is. No, of course. We got much more to say. Much more to say.
Yeah, this is another chapter that just makes me appreciate J.J. Taylor and the things that our leadership and we do right for our people. Just thinking about with COVID and gift cards and the things, you know, when we have hurricanes down here and just gift cards at the holidays and not that just giving gift cards, but I just think it our people know that our owner and our leadership really care about them. So this was a good chapter.
So to kind of piggyback off of Suzanne's point, it's like it came up on my social media just a couple of days ago that Hurricane Irma came and I had posted that I was so grateful to work for a company that didn't even stop to hesitate that we, you know, donated water to all the employees. And I mean, that's stuff that, you know, it's got much more to do with gift cards. It's got to do with there's a need that has to be met for our sales centers that are, you know, coming up with this impending storm. And you know, it's like, I mean, yeah, I'm super grateful to work for the company that I work for.
And I love that Dave talked about loyalty so much, about how, you know, if you want loyalty from your team members, you got to be loyal to your team members. And again, just the same thing you guys have been saying is, you know, J.J. Taylor as a company is just we're very loyal to our employees and we treat them well and we take care of them. It's literally, I don't know, it's, you know, people say this all the time, but it's literally like family. Your team members are family. And times of, you know, Hurricane Irma or any impending thing, COVID, I mean, J.J. Taylor has always had everyone's back. So it's great to work for a company that's like that.
Yeah, I really loved what he said about if you want to lead for loyalty, then you have to start by being loyal to your people and how much that matters. And I think that speaks to the heart of why I like working here so much. And what J.J. Taylor is to me is that this is a company that genuinely cares about its people. And you guys have mentioned great examples of that, right? And, you know, hurricane season, taking care of our teams. I mean, to the point of we opened our warehouse as a hurricane shelter when we needed to. We had people camping out in sleeping bags in offices to make sure that they had a safe place to be. And then in the wake of those storms, we went all in on making sure that they're able to rebuild and take care of themselves. And we've helped people get rental cars that have needed it because their car got knocked down by a tree. There have been big moments like that. There have also been little moments. There's sometimes stories that people don't even hear about. And I have the privilege of sitting in this office in Jupiter and being close to the guys who are making the decisions. And I've never seen them hesitate to make decisions like that. You know, we had a team member whose home burned down. And our CFO, Hank, and John Taylor, without hesitating, put up their family in a hotel for a month until they could get stabilized and the insurance checks came in. And you would never know about or hear about that story, but it didn't even faze them to say, we're going to cover a month in a nice hotel here in town to make sure that they're taken care of because they lost their home to a fire. Things like that, when you see them happen, are the things that make you go, my goodness, it's a place where people really do genuinely care about each other and about the people that work for them and with them. So I think, yeah, it's leading for loyalty begins with, if you want loyalty, you've got to give loyalty. And there's so many great examples that I've seen over the years of how we do that for our teams.
Yeah, I have actually a quick similar story. Actually, my home had a fire in it years ago, and my neighbor actually fought the fire, which is the craziest thing. He randomly saw this fire outside my house, and he fought the fire. And just how you said, Jeff, J.J. Taylor was, you know, to me was like, oh, what do you need? What do you? And I actually didn't need anything. And they were like, well, what about the guy who fought that fire? What could we do for him? And I was like, I don't know. I don't really know the guy that way. And J.J. Taylor delivered the guy beer and fun, you know, knickknacks and all. And the guy was in heaven. The guy, you would have thought the guy was given one, you know, a big check for $1 million. But just that gratitude that they showed to that guy who doesn't even work here. You know what I mean? It's just another instance of stuff that this company stands for.
Taking care of those that take care of ours. So I love the underlying message of this chapter for sure. So tell me about some of the things that you guys think we do well and continue to do well. Or are there things that struck you about leading for loyalty or things that you guys have been able to do or are able to apply? And what did that sort of speak to in your world?
Actually, to kind of go back to, one of my team members that just recently came down she was diagnosed with COVID. Kind of show how great our company is, it wasn't even a hesitation. She was covered by her for the couple of weeks that she was gone, the whole bit. And it kind of ties into something with what Dave Ramsey had put in here about leading for loyalty and building relationships. People are not looking for transactional gestures, is the word I was looking for. They are looking for, she was truly appreciative that she didn't have to worry about where her next check was coming from. And she didn't have to say, she was not working. She didn't work for 2 weeks, not one blip of, income. It was just something that was just really beautiful to see. And I know that builds loyalty from her. And the other team that knows of this, because we are a pretty close knitted group, they see it as well. And it's something, I'm very proud of who I'm working for.
I love that line he has about after taking care of one of their team members that way. Like, you think anybody could say anything bad within an earshot of him about this organization without a fight on their hands? And I feel that way about a lot of our guys. I imagine if you tried to down talk J.J. Taylor in a bar to the wrong people, you'd definitely have an argument on your hands, because there's a lot of loyalty out there built on exactly this.
And I love how Ramsey talked about, like, loyalty comes from fanatical integrity. Let your yes be your yes, your no is your no. And just, he talks about when you commit to paying someone, you pay them. And if you commit to doing something, you do it. And I believe we do that here. We don't blow smoke up our team members' butts, and we tell them, this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're doing for you, and we do it. And I love that about us.
And we're consistent about it, too. Integrity comes from consistency. If we do one thing today and do a different thing tomorrow, there is no consistency and therefore no loyalty, because nobody ever feels like they're getting the whole message.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. I think that's a big part, is that we, the way we treat our teams is consistent time and time again. And when we have problems, we handle them in the same way, and people know what to expect. And that clear expectation and knowing that things are going to be handled a certain way definitely is a big part of breeding that loyalty, for sure. So I've myself used the Belgian draft horse analogy many times, and he talks about the Belgian draft horses here, and I think it's such a great analogy. And the idea is, if you're not familiar with it, when it comes to Belgian draft horses, a single Belgian draft horse, these are the strongest, they're like Clydesdales, they're the biggest, strongest pulling horses in the world. And a single one can pull something like 2,000 pounds. But you put two of them together on a cart, and instead of the 4,000 that they could pull, additionally, all of a sudden they can pull up to 6,000 pounds. And it's the idea that exponentially, as we grow a team of players, we're exceeding what that team can do individually. And so I think it's a great analogy, and I think it certainly speaks to a lot of how we get things done. And what do you guys think about the analogy or the thought behind the additive power of teams and teamwork?
Well, he brings it back to one of the previous chapters and the importance of recruiting for the right team members. And, you want someone who has that passion and the collective unity that the team can get along. You'd rather have someone who you have to teach but has the passion and gets along with others than, you know, you don't want, he called them disgruntled superstars, because that's not serving the team well. So I like that he brings it back to the passion and the importance of recruiting for the right team.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, when you touched on synergy, because I know the delivery managers I have back here, every one of them has a different strength and weakness. But if you put them all together, they're a fantastic, well-oiled machine. So it's definitely good to have the different personalities, the different strengths, different weaknesses, and they all build off each other to make one solid unit.
Greater than the sum of its parts. Always greater than the sum of its parts. It's like Moneyball, right? You can go out and try and get a whole bunch of superstars, but it's going to be super expensive and they don't always work. And he talks about, you know, some of the big legendary all-star. You know, the all-star game is always one of the most boring parts of any sports season. I don't even care what sport you like. It's the all-star game is boring, right? Because it's not a team. It's just a collection of superstars, all of whom are trying to have their moment, and none of whom are really that committed because it's not their usual group, and they're more worried about getting injured than they are about getting the job done. The all-star game is inevitably a boring exhibition, but when you watch a really great team that plays together and fights together and makes it to the playoffs together, you're watching something special. And he talks about the Miracle on Ice and other teams over the years that have been made up of not necessarily the greatest individual players, but turn out to be the greatest teams because of that. I think that's such a key part of getting the right people on the bus, because as we talked about earlier, it's, you know, the hiring is so important. We have a tendency as leaders and as organizations, we want to hire the best. We want to get the best people on spec. But sometimes it's really not about getting the best on spec. It's about getting the best for us and letting that synergy outpace the individual talents.
As a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, wholeheartedly, you know, we have really recruited a bunch of superstars this year, you know, and with that, and I know like me and my co-fans are super excited about it, but there's a small part of my mind that goes, okay, so now that we have them all together, what kind of synergy is this team going to have? And are they going to produce, you know? So, I mean, I'm still forecasting all the way, but, you know, I mean, you have to see, you don't know what's going to happen. You really don't know what's going to happen. So go.
You're exactly right. As a fellow Buccaneers fan, Lisa, I'll agree. That team has had one of the best receiving cores in football the last 3 years and gotten nothing done with it because they didn't have the right synergy as a team and they didn't click and they weren't cohesive. Now, can one superstar quarterback come in and change that? We'll find out in the 2021. Yeah, we'll find it in the 2021 season. But for sure, it's a great example of individually. If you look at the individual stats of a lot of those receivers, they're great. But they weren't getting the wins, right? You had a top-rated quarterback, top-rated receiving core. Individual stats all looked great. Awesome team if you want to draft for your fantasy group, but the win-loss record didn't show up. And why? Because they weren't really as cohesive as a group as they could be, and teams who are scrappier and more connected and more capable are outperforming them. So a very recent and local example for us, but we've seen this throughout the years in teams like that. So he talks about the five enemies of unity in this chapter, and boy, if I just couldn't hear the echoes of Pat Lencioni and five dysfunctions ringing through this. But I'm curious what you guys think about the section on the five enemies of unity and what he has to say there.
I love that he leads it off with communication. I mean, ironically, we just got out of that chapter and he dives right back into it in the next chapter. Everything is built on communication, that if you, without it, you will never have unity because nobody knows what's going on. Mushroom communication, I love it. I use it all the time. I use a little bit different verbiage than he did in this book, but the point is the same.
Don't make me put the NSFW tag on this. I don't need the explicit content warning for this podcast.
But it all starts with communication. Unity, loyalty, integrity, teamwork, everything comes down to communication.
Poor communication is the first of the five enemies of unity, and it definitely speaks to it. And we did just cover that chapter, but I think it is worth retouching here that poor communication, again, I like the term. It's not just that poor communication is bad for unity. It is the enemy of unity. It is out to actively destroy the unity a team can have. He also talks about the others, lack of shared purpose, gossip, unresolved disagreements, and sanctioned incompetence. What are your guys' thoughts on those as well?
I mean, unresolved disagreements is pretty major, and kicking it back to communication too, it's really nipping those in the bud so that it doesn't fester and create that anger. And I mean, I've seen cases where those unresolved disagreements can just lay there, and something so small just turns into a major issue for a team. So I think that's a really important one to touch on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that one. And gossip is a huge one. Having such a large department and so many different personalities, it really goes back to communication. If you're not clear with the entire team, you know, every person in there, they'll take a story, make up a story. If they don't have the full details, they're going to invent their own details. And then as it spreads, it gets worse and worse. Gossip can be a huge demoralizing, thing that can sweep through through the department. So it just goes back to just having, you know, real good, you know, clear, transparent communication with everybody.
Yeah, let's take each one of those in turn, because I think they're both really important. And I'll start actually with the gossip one, and then we'll loop back around. But gossip has a two-prong detrimental effect on the team. One is, as an enemy of unity, misinformation, right? The fake news starts to spread. We make up a story, we add a few embellishments to it, we get some facts wrong, and all of a sudden, the fake news has taken root, and that becomes the gossip, and it spreads like wildfire, and it is so hard to undo that. People's first impression is everything, and once they hear something, unlearning that is so much more difficult than what they originally heard. So if the original story is gossip, winding that back can be incredibly difficult. But there's a second layer, I think, even to that gossip problem, which is people feeling like they've been left out of the chain of communication, right? And as an enemy of unity, the fact that I heard this from a coworker and not from a leader is its own problem, because now I feel like I'm out of the loop, I'm not getting told things I should know, and I'm disconnected from the rest of my team. So I think there is a really dual problem that exists when it comes to the gossip problem, not just in that the wrong information gets spread, but by spreading it through the wrong channels and the wrong ways, we break apart the unity of feeling like we're all part of the same team and on the same page. What do you guys think?
Well, I kind of like what he had stated, with the gossip part especially. Handling it in different ways, the way he recommends handling it is to hand your negatives up and your positives down, and if there isn't, and I think that's something that we need to communicate to our team members to let them know if there's an issue, then, bring it to someone that can actually do something about it. Whether it's your manager, whether it's your IT person, whether it's HR, whatever it is, like, don't just gripe about it, do something about it, and then of course, handing positives down. People want to know that they're valued. People want to know that they're appreciated. And, it's great for me to tell you, hey, Suzanne, so-and-so did a great job today, but without letting so-and-so know, then what did I accomplish? Nothing, So it's like, yeah, I loved that whole handing your negatives up and positives down statement. I really think that's something you can work on,
That no gossip rule is a brilliant way to describe a very real problem, which is, people need to vent. We have a problem. We want to talk about it with someone, and we should vent. We should talk about these issues because we don't want them to go unresolved, as we'll get into, that unresolved disagreements or unresolved problems are a huge killer. But where do we put them? We need to put them in the hands of people who can do something about it. And anything else is just gossip. If I'm just at the water cooler complaining with a coworker and neither of us can fix this thing, we're gossiping, and that's not good. But if I'm taking it to someone in the organization who can help me affect change, that's not gossip. That's problem resolution, and that's the right way to do it. It's a cultural mindset, but I think you're right, Lisa. It's something we really ought to work hard to instill in our teams, that bring your problems to the person who can help you resolve them, and you're not gossiping. Anything else, you are.
Yeah, I like how you talked about how, I think it was the front desk lady, or I can't remember the story exactly, but somebody was complaining to their front desk lady about an IT problem, and they're like, well, she doesn't work in IT. She can't help you. And I mean, we've all fallen victim to either being the person or being the ear that listened to the other person who listened to, I had a problem with this or IT or a different department or whatever. And you think to yourself, I don't even work in that department. I can't help you. But they'll never take that problem to the actual person who can resolve it, which is something that I never understand why people do it, because they can actually take that problem to somebody. But maybe it's goes back to chapter, I think it was one, fear. The people have fear. So,
Chris, I think people want validation that their problem is an actual problem and not their problem.
Yeah.
I think that is at the root of gossip many times is, do I feel this way? Am I the only one kind of mentality? Yeah. People are looking for validation that that they might have an actual gripe before they do something about it, or hopefully they do something about it. Yeah, gossip, I never thought of it as a fireable offense, but as he lays it out in this book, he makes a very valid case why for him it is, and maybe for us it should be. It can absolutely kill a team. It's a cancer. And if you don't cut it out like you would cancer, it's going to continue to grow and spread. So therefore, I guess I agree with him now that gossip can and should be a fireable offense.
To your point, Dan, I agree that, you know, sometimes, and again, it's part of the open door policy mentality, right? Is we tell people you can bring your problems anywhere. And we want that, you know, we do believe that we want that to be true. It's just that you can't leave them somewhere that they can't get affected. And I think as leaders, the challenge is twofold. One, we have to check ourselves and make sure if I'm going to go vent my problems, because you're right, Dan, we're looking for validation. Oftentimes, before I take this up the chain, I want to hear from somebody else. Am I the only one? And that's not gossip in its own form. That's a form of validating the problem. Or if somebody comes to you with something and says, hey, are you seeing this too? Are you having this issue? And you can validate it for them. That's okay, as long as we take that one extra step as leaders to go, okay, now that you and I have talked it out, now that you've gotten it off your chest and maybe even vented and dumped on it a little, what are we going to do to check this? Who can we take it to? You know, in my role here, I get that a lot. I get a lot of people that will stop by and just say, can I bounce something off you? And the answer is always, of course you can. But I always end those discussions with, so what are we going to do next? Who are you going to take this to now? Or can I help you take this to the right person to get action on it? And I think that's the key, is it's only really gossip when we walk away from the discussion and nothing's been solved and no one else has been engaged. If we, you know, have those moments of human venting and saying, listen, I just need to bitch about this for 10 minutes and I'm going to, and we're going to, and getting it all out. And that's great. But at the end, as leaders, it's incumbent on us to go, okay, now that you got it out of your system, what are you going to do to make it better? Or how can I help you get it to the right person to make it better? And if we achieve that, we transcend that gossip level, because anything else is toxic, and toxic people can't be left to fester in the workplace because they will infect us all. So let's talk a little bit about unresolved disagreements. Suzanne brought it up before, and I want to go back to it and talk a bit more because I think it's important. Unresolved disagreements, again, as an enemy of unity, as something that actively destroys team unity, I think is such a important piece to bring up, because the number of things I've seen and the number of times over the years where you have these legacy issues. Pat Lencioni in his book, Five Dysfunction, calls these the legacy obstacles to getting at the heart of good conflict, where it's like, you know, you have a problem with someone, it goes unresolved. The next time you go into dealing with that person, you're already kind of in a mood about it because the last time they never finished anything right. And to the point where eventually it gets to, I don't even want to talk to so-and-so. I don't even want to pick up the phone and have to deal with them, because every time I deal with that person, it never goes anywhere. It's always a hassle. That is how it just rots away the unity of a team. So what are some things that you can help us understand about, you know, how can we attack the unresolved disagreements problem? How do we make sure that we get resolution to stuff? What can we do as leaders to be leaders in this realm?
I know I've run across a couple of issues like this, and it kind of comes back to poor communication. I'll see someone only communicating by text messages or emails, and now they automatically think this guy's a jerk, but they have no face-to-face, no actual verbal interaction. So they're taking what's being responded to in the communication out of context. So a lot of times I just say, hey, have you talked to him? I was like, call him up, you know, go out and have lunch with him, you know, and that's really all it takes. And it was just a huge misunderstanding, but because they never actually extended that olive branch to meet face to face, or, you know, to build that relationship, you know, it was hurting their team, hurting how they're working together. And just something so simple as a phone call, or, you know, running into him in the trade, having lunch, you know, easy way to solve things, depending on the situation.
Yeah, even just a piggyback off of that, Dustin. I mean, I've had with sales reps and say delivery, they've had this unresolved problem, but they've never actually communicated between each other. It's just kind of a misunderstanding of, you know, this guy doesn't like me for this reason, or that person doesn't like me, and they don't even know each other. And so there's never been that form of communication. So I've done the same thing. I'm like, oh, have you ever called him? And I was, well, no, I've never actually talked to him. So then how do you guys know that, you know, if we just open up that line of communication, you'd be surprised that you know, that guy is actually a pretty good guy, or it's just they don't understand what you're at, what you want through a message on the iPad. Maybe if you talk to them, then it'd be a lot easier.
One thing I like to remind people, leaders especially, is and Dave, you know, going back to the beginning, talked about how, you know, again, leaders are you are the lid of your organization, right? You are the lid of your team. And when it comes to conflict resolution with others, you're half the problem always, right? So I always am amused when I'll have someone come and say, oh, how do I deal with so-and-so? Because they never want to communicate with me, and they never want to reach out, and they never want to update me on things. And inevitably I'll start with, well, how often are you reaching out to them and asking questions? Oh, well, I'm not. They're supposed to tell me stuff. I'm like, you're half the problem, my friend. You are half the reason that this communication, this relationship, in any relationship, if it's not working, you are at least 50% responsible for that relationship not working, because you are half the relationship. And so I think you're right, guys. It does start with, you got to own your part first. You have to be willing to extend the olive branch. You have to be the one willing to say, okay, I'm going to try. Because if you're not even trying, then why the heck would you expect somebody else to try as well?
Yeah, I've had to talk to my group, like initially years ago anyway. I've had to sit somebody down and explain to her, listen, I'm not asking you, and he says it almost verbatim, I'm not asking you to like this person. I'm asking you to work with them. And just, you know, I didn't hire a friend. I hired a coworker. And so it's like, and I want you guys of course, ideally you guys will get along great. But if you don't, it doesn't matter. You still have to maintain professionalism and communication, and you still need to deal with this person, you know. And it's like, and you know, I mean, it's not unresolved disagreements happen in any relationship that you have, whether it's professional, whether it's personal. You know, it's just a matter of finding your voice, stating what you need to state, getting what you can out of it, and then making it a workable relationship, you know, and just kind of going from that.
Lisa, you said such an important word in that, which I think is worth touching on even further, which is the professionalism aspect, right? And somebody has to be the bigger person when there's conflict to be resolved. And it takes forgiveness. It takes willingness to call something out, apologize, and move on. And again, we're half of all those relationships. So if we're in a situation with someone where there is an unresolved conflict, part of asking ourselves, have we done everything we can, is have we been willing to forgive? Have we been willing to give second chances? Have we been willing to be polite and respectful and professional in dealing with this person? Because if not, again, why would I expect somebody to treat me with respect and professionalism if I'm being a jerk in my communications or otherwise trying to blow off the situation? So I think there's a lot of value in that. And it's a part that we often forget, is if you want to get respect, you've got to give it first. And are we doing our part in our half of the relationship to get it resolved? So he also mentions sanctioned incompetence in here one more time. And we've talked about it before, but I, again, as an enemy of unity, as something that can attack and dissolve the unity of a team, sanctioned incompetence, the leader's inability or unwillingness to deal with poor performance on the team. Boy, I think this is such a perfect place to bring this up again, because it really does eat the team alive when they see that someone on the team is allowed to not pull their share of the weight and get away with it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, just like you said, the rest of the team will say to themselves, why am I working so hard if they don't have to do anything? So, I mean, right there, it just demoralizes everyone.
Yep. I think the team knows that the bar is set at the lowest place that someone's allowed to hurdle it without consequence. And so when one person is allowed to not perform, everybody else that is performing looks at it and goes, what am I doing this for? What's all this extra effort getting me if I could be doing it that little and still be fine? No concerns, no write-ups, no corrective actions, no nothing. I can just skate on by at this level. What's the incentive to work higher or harder?
Yeah, we had a situation here at work in Minnesota not that long ago. We do what we call weekly focuses, and they're generally a two-week period of time that we have a hyper focus on a given task, whether it be to gain pods or gain displays or get price features, whatever the case. The top three performing sales reps get compensated financially. But we need to hit a house goal in order to get that financial reward for those top three people. One of our top performing reps consistently hits and makes very good money on this plan. But this one particular time, we fell just two pods short of hitting the house goal. He put in an insane amount of work and ended up not getting paid at all. And it created a sense of, why am I working so hard and not being rewarded for it? while other people aren't doing anything, although they're not being rewarded, they're also not being coached or punished. So it was very eye-opening for me, and we've now handled it differently where we set individual goals within the house goal. So now I do have a way to hold people accountable for at least the bare minimum to try to help the entire team or organization hit the house goal. And it has solved all of our problems. So sanctioned incompetence is no longer tolerated in our department.
No, and you couldn't be more right. It's so important, right? I mean, when we talk about the line of accountability and the Oz principle during great manager or during coaching and corrective action training, you know, we say you set that line of accountability and then you expect everybody to be above it. Well, that line of accountability is set at the lowest level that you're willing to tolerate from anyone. And so if one team member gets away with it, every team member is going to know that they can get away with it. You can't have different levels of what's acceptable on a team where people are doing the same work. And you might have specific, you know, variances and goals, but the reality is you can't hold different team members accountable at different levels. Ultimately, that's got to be across the board because they talk, they know, they speak to each other, they're aware, and they know who's kicking it and they know who's getting held accountable and they know who's failing but not. And if you don't think your team knows that, then you're missing the boat completely as a manager. They know these things. They are as obvious as it is to us. And so it's less often the managers who don't see those problems that bother me. It's the ones who see it, but because of fear and timidness are unwilling to take action. Those are the ones that really damage their teams the most because the teams know. The teams always know. And if we don't know, we just look incompetent to our people. Final thoughts on people matter most and building a team on loyalty and avoiding the enemies of unity.
Jeff, I love what Dave said to wrap up the piece about sanctioned incompetence. Most leaders have a tendency toward being too slow or too fast to act. You know, find your tendency and move two steps in the other direction, and your team culture will balance out. I find myself admittedly being inconsistent in that. There's times I want to act too fast and other times I drag my feet. So finding my own consistency and then moving two steps the other direction, that was very enlightening to me and something that I'll put into practice.
Oh, thank you for bringing it up, Dan. You're absolutely right. That's such a great metaphor to help us understand how to dial in ourselves, is to have that moment of clarity and then move a little bit. He does explain that very well. It's a good part of that chapter. Well, once again, I think we have done an outstanding job of making sense of what Dave has to say. And again, I think this is a chapter that really speaks to the heart of who we are as a company. You know, we do believe that our people are our most important asset, and this is right in that same vein. So really great chapter. Great to give us some new insights and ideas. Great to remind ourselves of what we value most in our culture and how to make sure that we continue as leaders to protect and defend and advance that culture, because that's our job. We are the keepers of culture here at JJ Taylor, and we've got to make sure that we've got good strategies and good focus on keeping it the way we want it, because we're the only ones who can do it. So nice work, everybody. Thanks for being a part of it. I will thank my crew as I do. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Chris, appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Dan, thank you for the insights.
Thanks, Jeff.
Suzanne, thanks for being a part of it.
Thanks for having us.
Always happy to. And Dustin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Every time. All right. So that is chapter 11, and next week will be chapter 12. We are quickly coming towards the end, only 15 chapters. I can see the finish line. We're almost there. And so we will continue on until we cross it. But for now, that's been another episode of the Brew University Book Club podcast, season one, Entree Leadership, chapter 11. We'll look forward to seeing you next week for chapter 12. Thanks for joining us, and see you next time.